All right. Hello. You are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, and we are broadcasting today from the unceded territories of Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. The Real World, if you haven't listened before, it's the UBC Film Society's radio segment, and we talk about all sorts of things film-related. I'm Lily, as usual.
I'm Emma, also as usual.
And we're joined by a very special guest today, our friend, our film enthusiast, Isabel.
I am a friend and a film enthusiast.
Welcome to the show, Isabel. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite good. Thanks for asking.
We're very excited to talk today. We're talking about the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which Isabel brought up as a potential topic, and Emma and I are both super pumped about the idea.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll get into that shortly, but just a quick film sock update section right now. As you might already know, we don't just have a radio show. We host like all sorts of film-related events. We do screenings in our theater, The Norm, which is in the Life Building on UBC campus. You can look it up. You can also go to UBC Film Society on Instagram, is where we like post most of our little updates and events. This Friday, if I'm correct, we're having a pub night at the Wolf and Hound. So I think that starts around 6 p.m. And you can like just go meet, chat with other people who like film, and it's super awesome and super fun. Anyway, yeah, check out UBC Film Society on Instagram. So yeah, today we're talking about the Rocky Horror Picture Show. There's a lot to get into.
There is. This is a wealth of a topic.
Yeah, we're going to start off first with some ads and then get right into science fiction double feature, which opens up the film itself. We thought it should open up our segment. How do you guys feel about this song? Is it like a top one, or is it just kind of iconic, like with the moving lips and everything?
Ooh, I feel it is a banger, you know? Despite its icon status, it does still go hard.
Mm-hmm.
I never tire of hearing it.
Okay, perfect.
I think, yeah, it's in my top 3 to 5 songs on the soundtrack. Love this song.
Okay, great. Top 3 to 5?
I think so.
Okay. Wow. Wait, I need to rank mine. I want in on this, like... Okay, well, we better get to your top 1 and 2. We'll get to that later. All right, so first off, we're going to play some ads, and then we will be right back.
Catch California noise artists TVMA and Andrew Wayne as they bring their West Coast tour to Green Auto on Wednesday, October 16th. Joined by local favorites, Two Girls, One Daw, Tough Cell, B4 At, and Libra Baby. Don't miss this night of genre-blurring electronic music by queer and trans artists. Doors at 7 p.m. and music at 8 p.m. Tickets are $10 online via Green Auto's Eventbrite or $15 at the door. Masks required. Can't wait to see you there. Experience the world of education this Saturday, October 26th at the Vancouver Convention Center. You can meet with top universities, graduate schools, and professional schools from Canada and around the world. Register online to stay up to date and check in at the fair to be eligible for prizes, including a free flight to anywhere in the world on Air Canada. Explore your future with Study and Go Abroad this October 26th by registering now at studyandgoabroad.com/Vancouver/. studyandgoabroad.com/Vancouver/.
Awakened one. Listen without distraction. Ready or not.
You're going in. Listen to Breakfast with the Browns every Monday morning.
From 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Something that just offers you the place, the chance to stay in a mood.
Breakfast with the Browns.
The best in ambient, downtempo, electronic, ASMR, pop loungecore music. Totally Alpha Wave.
On CITR 101.9 FM.
Thus the most ordinary movement in the world may agitate 1,000 odd disconnected fragments. now bright, now dim, hanging and bobbing and dipping and flaunting.
So, beauty remains in the impossibilities of the body.
You know that, don't you?
Wake up.
Dear UBC Indigenous students, applications for the 2024-2025 Intergenerational Wellness Program, which offers traditional Indigenous teachings, stories, dances, food, and ceremonies from across North and Central America, have opened. Attendees will have access to 7 events throughout the 2024-2025 school year. Each event has invited honorable and reputable Indigenous leaders, knowledge keepers, and ceremonialists such as medicine men and medicine women to share their knowledge, wisdom, and healing traditions. Taking part in this one-of-a-kind educational opportunity at UBC helps to reshape and heal Indigenous communities on campus and beyond through revitalizing Indigenous practices and values. Applications are open from September 16th to October 1st, 2024. For more information, please email intergenerational.wellness@ubc.ca. That's intergenerational.wellness@ubc.ca.
Thank you. picture show by RKO. To the late night double feature picture show in the back row.
My goodness. I love it. Okay, I think that's the perfect way to open up our show today, because it kind of like introduces a lot of the context of the film. Like you were just saying, like it's mentioning all these horror and science fiction films like within the song, right?
Yeah, it's a bunch of, you know, Forbidden Planet, Dr. X, like old sci-fi movies that are definitely before my time. I mean, Rocky Horror itself is before my time. Like, I first learned about Rocky Horror either from The Perks of Being a Wallflower or Glee.
True.
And yeah, and then went to see it for the first time at the Hot Docs Theater in Toronto, where they would do it with a shadow cast.
Really?
Every month. I'm not sure if they still do it. I haven't looked in a while, but I went for the first time when I was like 14 or 15, and yeah, was obsessed with the movie itself, but also just the culture of like people dressed crazy, yelling at the screen, just being incredible freaks in a theater. So much fun. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, Emma and I had an episode on the show, I don't know how long ago, about movie theater experiences just as a whole and how special they are, mm-hmm. and how much more fun it is to see any movie in theater, like, is always better than seeing it at home. But especially like ones like this, where there is a certain aspect that just makes it a gazillion times more memorable and fun, like to see it with a group of people.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And like all rules of theater etiquette are broken in seeing Rocky Horror. Like the rule of be quiet during the movie, out the door. Like the rule is do not be quiet during the movie. I mean, for a long time there was a tradition of throwing confetti at the screen when Meatloaf comes out as Eddie, and throwing rice at the screen when Frankenfurter and Rocky the creature get married or have their little commitment ceremony. I remember at Hot Docs, they would always put in bold a lot of times, like, do not bring rice. Do not throw rice at the screen. Like, they don't want to clean that up anymore, which makes sense.
That's so funny, because we were just looking at their screening it at the Rio, like, coming up next week or something. And so us three were actually just looking out in the station's, like, lounge at tickets because we want to go see it live. And it was like, under no circumstance, all bold, don't bring rice. And I was like, okay, yeah. I wasn't gonna. Okay,
yeah,
to be
now
fair,
this is making me want to bring rice. Yeah. I won't, I promise.
Okay, well, this is good context to know. I'm glad you told me that, because I was so confused. Like, so just for context, I watched Rocky Horror for the first time like last night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is like fresh in your mind.
Fresh in my brain, a lot to digest, a lot to discuss today.
Yeah.
When was the first time you saw it though, Emma?
Oh, I think the first and last, I've only seen it once, and it was, I think, like a summer or two ago. I just watched it in my basement with my sister, which is like, you know, I don't think I've got the full experience of the film yet, because I know there's this theater in Calgary, shout out the Plaza. I know they put it on every year at Halloween, and I think like pretty much every showing leading up to it, including the one on Halloween, is just like sold out already. Mm-hmm. Which is like, this is not a theater that's like selling out frequently. But I think they announced the dates like early October, and it was like tickets were gone within like days. Like people love this. It's like, it's so nice to be able to see that it's like become such a phenomenon in the larger culture.
It is like the cult movie. Like, I feel like for a lot of people, the first thing that they think of when they think of cult movies or movies with cult followings, in that like it, like there are so many long-running screenings that are always sold out and always, like, lively. Over the past few days since I knew I was doing this episode, I've been doing a lot of reading on Rocky Horror.
Good.
Yeah. Born too late to see Rocky Horror when it came out. Yeah. Born in the right time to read so much about Rocky Horror on the internet.
On, like, Rocky Wiki. Like, the world's our oyster in this day and age, because every single... It has a Wikipedia page. Like, it has its own page. I love movies like that. Like, back when we did our Dune episode, and I watched Dune the night before, and I was like, how am I going to understand the entire universe? There's a wiki page for that. They explain everything in depth.
Love.
So,
absolutely love.
Even though we weren't born in the right time to actually experience it, which might have been cooler than reading about it online.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, in my online research, I found out that... Sal Piro, who was the longtime official president of the Rocky Horror Fan Club, who was like, I think either the director or organizer of the original, and by original, I mean like the first to do it, Shadowcast in New York at the Waverly Theater, wrote a book about Rocky Horror.
Wow.
Don't remember what it's called. Hold on. I want to look it up.
The Dedication.
Yeah.
It's epic.
Oh, yes. It's called Creatures of the Night. The Rocky Horror Picture Show experience, and it's sort of about like the culture putting on the shadow cast and like what it was like to be part of the original group of people who made it the cult movie that it was. I was just telling Lily that in my research I found out that the culture of like shouting things at the screen started, I think it was someone said, this might have been Sal Piro, this might have been someone else, said it was like about 5 months after weekly screenings began at the Waverly, that one woman during the scene where Janet and Brad are out in the rain holding newspapers over their heads to try to keep them dry, this woman who I guess had been seeing it week after week finally got so fed up and was like, buy an umbrella, Janet! And then like it... was sort of like everything broke loose and everyone started yelling at the screen, and that's where we are now.
I love that. Okay, yeah. So as we've been mentioning, like, it's this huge culture viewing experience, cult following that's following the Rocky Horror Picture Show. If you haven't seen it, let's give a brief recap. So Brad and Janet are two main characters. Brad is played by Barry Bostwick, and Janet Weiss is played by Susan Sarandon.
The iconic Susan Sarandon. Yeah. Love her. Forever celebrity crush.
Obsessed with her. And they get engaged, and they're like in the car on a trip to visit their old teacher. Their car breaks down, and they're in an isolated area. So they go to like the nearest building, which is the Bizarre Residence of Dr. Frankenfurter. So that's where we start off, if you haven't seen it. And the thing is, I was thinking about it because I've gone so long without having seen it, but even if you think you haven't seen it, you've seen it somewhere. Yeah. It's everywhere. I was just talking about this with my friend in class because she was like, oh, I kind of really don't know anything about it. And I pulled it up, and right away from the movie poster, you think of, like, whether you think of The Perks of Being a Wallflower or, like, any other piece of media that's referenced it, like, you've seen it somewhere in media culture, just, like, in consuming anything ever.
Yeah, the iconic lips that sing science fiction double feature and that are also on the poster that I feel like everyone has seen somewhere, especially with the subheading under it, A Different Set of Jaws, which... It came out the same year Jaws came out. They like perfect timing to make a great joke, awesome joke.
Yeah. Yeah, those like sort of like midnight films sort of showings, like that circuit that was being run in like the 70s. Like, this is definitely the most famous to come out of that. Like, there's still like prevalent movies. Like, Pink Flamingos is still like, you know, obviously insanely like pertinent for modern day, but it's got nothing on like Rocky Horror. Like, just how massive of a phenomenon it has become is really insane, I think, considering where it started and how it was just like barely making it as
right,
a film.
Because it
like,
flopped kind of at the beginning.
Which is kind of like a classic cult movie story at this point of like, it came out and no one understood it and no one went to see it and it was closing down. And then like some executive at Fox inspired by, I think, I mean, Pink Flamingos was one of the films that like had a cult following of like people who went to midnight screenings was like, let's show it as a midnight screening in a sometimes double feature, and which is kind of faded from science fiction double feature, the late night double feature picture show.
Exactly. Okay, well, so then if you're a young filmmaker, take this as inspiration. Like, if it's a complete flop when you first release your movie, like, it's a great sign.
Yeah. Yes.
You're going places.
Yeah. Start hiring people to yell at your movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You too can
hire me
this.
To yell at your movie.
Yeah. All three of us will come.
Yeah.
Single-handedly make it a flop to, like, the biggest cultural impact ever, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll make your film a spectacle.
Yeah, because I was thinking it's kind of even Clue, which came out kind of shortly after, a similar trajectory of like flopping at first, but then also gained like a huge cult following as well, which I love that movie. And then that also like ties in really well because it has Tim Curry.
Tim Curry.
As like the one at the mansion that people come up to in a rainy day. Like lots of parallels between the two, I feel.
Yeah. No, crazy that there are two movies where Tim Curry, is a host at a spooky mansion.
I love it.
He's
found
his niche, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the dream, though. Like, just troll around, like, a big old mansion all day.
Yeah. Another job that I really want to be hired for.
Yes.
Host at a spooky but not necessarily haunted mansion, but also maybe haunted.
Yeah,
maybe
depending on your reading of Rocky Horror and Clue.
Yeah, exactly. I know, I was also thinking how I want to go back and see not only the films that it seems to have like influenced a bit and like have this similar trajectory like Clue, but the films that it drew inspiration from, whether to poke fun at them or to like pay tribute to. Again, a lot of them were before our time, but the main one I was thinking about was Frankenstein, of course. Have you guys seen like the 1931 Frankenstein?
No.
Can't say I have.
Boris Karloff, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name
right. No, but I
gotta
watch it before October's over.
Yeah.
Yes. October's the time.
Grind.
I think also, like, even if you haven't seen sort of old cheesy sci-fi horror movies, like, you sort of understand what it's poking fun at, just of, like, you know, this, like, very square couple walking through the darkness being like, maybe we should go knock on the door of this big spooky house. I'm sure there are friendly people who will let us use their telephone. Like, you get it without necessarily having seen what it's referenced.
Yeah. Totally.
And even
like just the archetypes that are shown in the film, like the like hunched over henchman and the monster and the mad scientist, like, it's nice to know where those draw from, but also they've become like so classic and popularized that I guess you don't really have to have seen.
Yeah.
But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, like, the exact same thing. Like, aww. Especially with, like, Frankenstein, it's like, I feel like everyone just, like, knows, you know, what's happening. That they know the iconic imagery. And even, like, Bride of Frankenstein. Like, there's allusions to that in this, like, later of, like, Magenta's costumes. She's got, like, the two, like, white highlights in her hair.
Yeah, you're so right.
And it's like, I think these are just, like, these figures have become just so iconic that, in a way, like, Rocky Horror, you've just been, like, subconsciously engaging with them for so long. You kind of, the source material becomes, like, irrelevant and maybe even sometimes, like, disappointing. Like, I feel like, for me, this is going to be crazy, but I was disappointed the first time I watched Rocky Horror. And I think that's because I watched it without the, like, experience or the knowledge of what an experience could be like.
Okay.
Like, I think, you know, sitting in my basement watching it, I was like, okay, this doesn't feel like much. But I feel like seeing it play out in front of you in a theater, like, with other people who are shouting things at the screen, and there's, like, a shadow cast happening, and everyone's dressed up, like, being a part of something like that is just so totally different from sitting in your basement being like, yeah, Yeah. It's time to do the time warp. Like, let's do it again. You know?
See, yeah. I think I kind of had the opposite experience because I went in, like, I went to a shadow cast screening with a friend who had already been to a couple, and she sort of sold it to me as a, like, this is a so bad it's good movie. Like, you know, it's a terrible movie, but people love it because of, and I don't actually think that that's what it is. Like, I don't think it's failing to be something. I think, like, it knows what it's doing and it succeeds as this, like, campy satire. Yeah. And also just I had the big spectacle of what going to see Rocky Horror is around me. So I was like, what do you mean so bad it's good? That was amazing.
Yeah. Like, this is definitely one of those cult classics. It's not a cult classic in the same way, like, The Room is, where it's just, like, so bad it's good.
Yeah.
But it's a cult classic in that it does understand what it's drawing from and, like, is very well informed of its influences, and how it uses those in the film, I think, really shows, like, this is a movie that, like, is made with intention. It's not accidentally campy. Mm-hmm. Like, they went in knowing they were going to make a movie that was just, like, absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I could, like, I would agree that it's intentional, and you can tell that it's satire and, like, poking fun at things, but also, like, honoring, like, certain tropes from other films as well. I don't think it's, like, so bad it's good.
Yeah.
It's just good.
It's just, yeah.
It's just actually really good. Okay, well, let's go into our next song. We've got Damn It, Janet. How does this rank for you guys?
This one's definitely top three.
Ooh.
Definitely top three.
Yes.
Okay. Emma?
Not top three, but still, you know, still a solid. I think I just like the whole soundtrack. Like, yeah. I'm having, like, a great old time listening in. But, yeah, definitely not taking the top three, though. How about you, Lily? Is this cracking top three?
I really liked it. Like, because this is the first, like, major song, right?
Yeah. I mean, after science fiction double feature.
And we see them transition to the song for the first time.
Yeah.
Like, see Brad, like, transition into singing. I think that was really, like, pivotal for me. Pivotal within, like, the first, like, couple minutes. But I was like, okay, it's happening. And you don't really, like, well, you expect them to sing. It's a musical. But, like, like you said, you've got these very, like, upright, like, heterosexual characters just kind of, like, stiff as boards walking around. And then they make this transition into singing for the first time. And I really liked it. And the lyrics are so fun. You can tell that it would be something fun to kind of shout back at.
Yes.
Because they keep responding with Janet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, you feel like you are the part of the chorus of gravediggers that are, like, yeah, responding Janet in the background.
Yeah, I think, oh God, seeing this for the first time, like, I knew Rocky Horror was a musical, obviously. Like, I feel like so many of their songs have just transcended outside of the soundtrack. But I think it just leans into that camp aspect of a musical so well. Like, this movie, if it wasn't a musical, I don't know if it would work as well as it does. Like, I feel like so much of its identity is tied up in its music.
Absolutely.
Which is, you know, it is, like, obviously, like, most musicals are like that. But I think this one in particular, it's just, it's so much fun as well. I love that this is kind of, like, Halloween-y. I feel like we don't get enough spooky musicals.
No, truly. Like, I don't consider myself the biggest fan of musicals. I think I think I've become less of a hater over the past couple of years and have come around to musicals a little bit more. But yeah, like, I think it's the element, maybe because I discovered this movie when I was a teenager, that I was able to be like, haha, like, it's making fun of musicals. But also, like, it does still kind of feel proud of its place as a musical. Like, in some ways it does feel sincere in that, I mean, the vocal performances are amazing, the songs are amazing.
Oh yeah. Like, they're going, you know? They're giving us a musical, which is, yeah.
I love it. Okay, wait, let's listen to Damn It, Janet, and then we'll talk a little bit more about our favorite performances, favorite songs, quotable moments. Okay, here is Damn It, Janet.
Janet?
Yes, Brad?
I've got something to say.
Uh-huh.
I really love the skillful way you beat the other girls to the bride's bouquet.
River was deep, but I swam it.
Janet.
The future is ours, so let's plan it.
Janet.
So please, don't tell me to can it.
Janet.
I've one thing to say, and that's damn it, Janet. I love you. The road was long, but I ran it.
Janet.
There's a fire in my heart, and you fan it.
Janet.
If there's one fool for you, then I am it.
Janet.
I've one thing to say, and that's damn it, Janet. I love you. Here's the ring to prove that I'm no joker. There's three ways that love can grow. That's good, bad, or mediocre. Oh, J-A-N-E-T, I love you so.
Oh, it's nicer than Betty Monroe had.
A rat.
Now we're engaged and I'm so glad. You met Mom and you know Dad.
Oh, Brad.
One thing to say, and that's Brad. I'm mad for you too. Oh, Brad.
Oh, damn it.
I'm mad.
Oh, Janet. In his science examine.
Janet.
Made me give you the eye and then panic.
Janet.
Now I've one thing to say, and that's damn it, Janet, I love you. Damn it, Janet.
Oh, Brad, I'm mad.
Damn it, Janet.
I love you.
My goodness, so good. I literally, yeah, I don't know, I think that one's a top one for me. And like, for performance wise I just like it because I love Brad and Janet's characters. I thought they were so funny, like especially Brad. I think he was the first one I noticed, just like based off of the actor's like comedic timing and everything. I thought that his facial expressions, like, he's not doing that much. He doesn't have like an extravagant character. He has like a purposefully kind of like dull-ish character compared to all of our other main characters, but they take advantage of it and make it so funny. They'll just kind of have him in the background kind of making, like, he looks like a bit of an airhead, like there's not much going on back there, but he does it perfectly.
Yeah, like some of the best portrayals of just like cartoonishly square, like sort of high school sweethearts, like so like innocent and like, oh, just like incredible caricatures of,
yeah, because they're poking fun a little bit at what I feel like in a lot of horror, a lot of films in general, really, the male is like stereotypically like this really protective, dominant character, and Frankenfurter like even points at that when Brad kind of comes up behind Frankenfurter and is like, we just want to use your telephone. And, like, no one's intimidated by you. Like, what are you yelling for? Like, no one's going to give you what you want. You have no authority to what you're saying. And Frankenfurter's like, oh, so forceful, so dominant, or whatever. And it's so true because, actually, Brad is not the stereotypical, like, fiancé who's there to protect. Like, he's actually the, like, most naive character of the bunch. In my opinion, like, he's just kind of trusts what's going on, and the whole time he's like, well, hello, I'm Brad, like just introducing himself as his wife is the one who's like, what the hell? Or not his wife, fiance, is like, we got to get out of here. At least at the beginning, he's the most like naive kind of dits, which I'm obsessed with, him being the dits of the group.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting how the film, like, treats Brad in this kind of, like, he's very, like, quickly dismissed. So I think, like, that does add to the subversiveness of the film, like, overall, like, kind of how we see this sort of straight, white, cis, hetero couple is, like, they're the freaks in this scenario. Like, they're so weird for, like, you know, how they are and that sort of thing. But then, like, typically, like, you know, you get, like, Frankenfurter, who would normally, like, you look at, like, all the other films of the 70s, like, you know, these, someone who's this flamboyant and, like, explicitly just themselves isn't, like, going to be the butt of the joke, but, like, they're not for this film.
No.
Like, everyone wants Frankenfurter, like, for good reason. Yes. I mean, come on.
But, come like, on. They're in complete control. Everyone's obsessed with Frankenfurter. Yeah, and exactly, for good reason. So charismatic, so charming, so convincing in a manipulative way at points.
Yeah, I mean, Frankenfurter is, like, I mean, there's so much to talk about with this character. I think, like, my favorite reading of, like, Frankenfurter and the whole House of Transylvanians from planet Transylvania is just that, like, I mean, one, they're, you know, if you see them as villains, they're very lovable villains, and, like, they are sort of who you're rooting for. And when Brad and Janet come out in full Frankenfurter drag, and it's sort of this, like, moment of sexual discovery and, like, you know, like, arguably very on-the-nose metaphor for, like, queer discovery, like, you know, as an audience, like, that this is the moment you're waiting for, and, like, this is what you're cheering on. But I think I also really like the reading of the Frankenfurter gang as sort of, like, this, like sort of a satire on, like, queer villains, and, like, you know, this is, like, the, you know, the group of scary queer people that straight people think are out to get you, and it's just, you know, a household of people partying and having a great time.
All they want is pleasure. All they want is fun. Why is that so hard?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That's a cool reading.
I've been obsessed over the past couple of days with like an official audience participation script that someone put online, which is like all of the things that people yell at the screen. And the line where Frankenfurter goes, "Oh, come on, Brad, there's no crime in giving yourself pleasure." One of the things that people yell back is, "It's a crime in New Jersey," which I think you can regionally do wherever you are.
It's a crime in New Jersey? Everyone yells that back?
I mean, you know, whoever thinks of it first, I guess.
I need to take a look at this script.
Yeah, I'll send it over.
I think it's so interesting how, like, the callback script has kind of evolved. Because I was reading, and I know it's like, if someone yells something and it goes over well, people are just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I think some people come up with things, you know, off the hat, and then people are like, "Oh, I'm gonna steal that joke next week."
Yeah, no, it's so cool how it, like, builds onto itself to have created this. Like, there is no marketing in the world that could have, like, created a movie with an event like this around it in such a way that it has, like, continued to be so prevalent since its release. Like, this film came out in the 70s, and we're still, like, you know, there's still, like, showings. Like, every indie cinema on Halloween is gonna be doing Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like, you can bet on that.
At a lot of places, I mean, still every month, or I think it's some places every week. I'm sure there are still places that do a weekly Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
I gotta look it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that there, like, used to be a theater that would do, like, the midnight screenings weekly, but it's a grocery store now, so.
Aww.
I hate you, Vancouver. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. Such a shame.
All right.
Do you have, like, a favorite character or favorite character arc or anything, Emma?
I don't know. I feel like I love Frankenfurter. I think it's so much fun.
Yeah,
like,
so true.
Just every single outfit they show up in as well is just, like, the drip just keeps, like, compounding on
itself. Beyond compare.
Like, oh my god, yeah. I think, like, well, every single outfit in this movie is just, like, immediately. Like, if you don't have a Halloween costume, just watch that movie. You will have, like, 12 options by the end of it.
Yeah, for years I've been saying I want to pull off a good magenta costume because, like, I have the big hair for it. And I just, like, have never gotten my act together in time to, like, really do it well because I don't want to do a half-assed magenta. Like, I want it. If I'm doing it, it has to be on point.
Oh, yeah. No, Rocky Horror demands, I think. Like, yeah. Full commitment to the
bit. That is not a last-minute throw-together costume. No. Like, if you're not putting some muscle into it, you're not doing it right.
Oh, yeah.
This year could be your year.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I've got 15 days. Yeah. Whatever. This is more important than schoolwork. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. No.
Throw midterms aside, it's time for the world's best magenta costume for Halloween.
I think magenta is maybe a favorite character. I mean, magenta and Columbia, like, even though they're definitely side characters, like, make the movie for me in a lot of ways. First of all, Columbia's, like, squeaky little singing voice, obsessed. And also just their little dynamic of being, like, the gossipy little girls that are always hanging around and them, like, whispering to each other during touch me being like, do you mean she's, and, you know, when they're sort of gossiping about Janet's sex life.
Yeah.
Oh, queens.
I love that part. I was thinking about that scene too, but also about how it kind of, like, I don't know if this was on purpose. Well, I'm assuming it was. But kind of how the movie, like, parodies female sexuality and how it's represented, like, in other horror movies as well.
Mm-hmm.
And how female sexuality is often, like, this thing that brings up all of these, like, evil and, like, other villainous parts of the horror. Like, female sexuality isn't something that helps the plot. Like, it's something that kind of happens. And then it kind of is part of the anticipation of something really bad happening. Mm-hmm. Like those two teenagers who are about to have sex in, like, Halloween or whatever. Like, just classic ones like that. But how they kind of flip this. But they make fun of it a little bit, of the voyeurism of watching this and how that's a part of horror movies, by having Columbia and Magenta, like, watching through the TV screen. Because they're, like, watching the virgin, like, lose her virginity. And they're gossiping about it, like, oh my God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And I feel like that's, like, a funny way to poke fun at us watching other horror movies, like, in anticipation of what's going to happen next.
Yeah. And it's, like, I mean, you know, if we're going back to, like, Bride of Frankenstein and this thing of, like, you know, like, I mean, you can even, like, pull things like Twilight or whatever into it, where it's like this, like, dark force of falling in love with this monster, like this Beauty and the Beast thing, and the guy she gets with is Rocky, who is, like, canonically dumb as a brick and like only exists to be, like, super hot and muscular and wear that tiny gold Speedo, like, go Janet.
And she's completely, like, liberated. Like, by the end, she's the one who's gained, like, all this confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, she is kind of the person with the biggest character arc of, like, you know, Brad is kind of just along for the ride, like, continuously introducing himself, being this, like, not intimidating but thinks he is man. The whole Frankenfurter gang is literally just there to party and have a good time. I mean, you know, like, there's the whole business of the riffraff Frankenfurter standoff in the end or whatever. But, like, I don't know. I think the heart of the movie, to me, is Janet discovering herself as a sexual being.
Yeah. I think it does really show, like, this movie is, like, for as, like, silly and fun it is still, like, focused in on all these different, like, topics I feel like weren't really being subverted or discussed at the time. And it's really interesting to see how it's able to kind of still, like, have these ideas, like, as an undercurrent while maintaining this sort of, like, fun, glitzy, like, over-the-top persona. I think that's, like, it is, like, indicative of Rocky Horror Pictures as, like, a really good satire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the, like, awesome, glitzy, like, over-the-top numbers is Don't Dream It, which is your
This is my number one song on the Rocky Horror soundtrack.
Isabelle's number one.
Don't Dream It Be It.
All right. Well, let's give that a listen. It's literally such an iconic number.
Oh.
The lighting, like, just the angles they're getting for Frankenfurter are just out of this world. And as they should, get the best angles right over top. I love it.
Uh-huh.
Whatever happened to Fay Wray, that delicate satin-draped frame, as it clung to her thigh, how I started to cry, 'cause I wanted to be dressed just the same. Give yourself over to absolute pleasure. Swim the warm waters of sins of the flesh. Erotic nightmares beyond any measure. And sensual daydreams treasure forever. Can't you just see?
Get out of this trap before this decadence saps our wits. I've got to be strong and try to hang on, or else my mind may well snap and my life will be lived.
It's beyond me. Help me, mommy.
God bless Lily Saint Cyr.
I was like,
hello, we're back on. That was a good one. Good choice. Thank you, Isabel.
Don't dream it, be it.
Yeah.
Inspiring words to live by. And I think also just an example of, like, there is a sincere heart at the core of this, like, campy, satirical movie. Like, truly, don't dream it, be it.
Yeah.
There is, like, definitely, I love the notes of, like, sincerity and community and belonging. What did you kind of take away from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think even without knowing the culture around it and the importance to the queer community and the queerness of the Rocky Horror fan community and the, you know, cult of the cult following, like, even just with the text of the movie, like, you know, the sense of pride and, you know, embracing your true self and like having so much fun along the way is so palpable and comes through so strongly and like just does not shy away from itself. Yeah.
Are there specific points that about the film that like are mentioned a lot or studied as the importance to queer communities?
I mean, I'm not sure. I think, you know, this going back to this idea of don't dream it, be it, like so ahead of its time for 1975. Yeah, I mean, you know, I went to this screening when I was like 14 or 15 as like a young, recently out queer person. And like it meant so much to me to see like a big group of queer people celebrating and having a great time. And, you know, this was in like the mid 2010s. So I can only imagine what that felt like in the late 70s. Yeah, I was just listening to a podcast where Harper Steele, who was like formerly the head writer of SNL and came out as a trans woman in 2022, talked about like how Rocky Horror was like a big moment for her in, you know, seeing queer people on screen, and how like she had this moment afterwards of like seeing this queer friend group at a diner near the theater and like sort of getting a glimpse into what her life could someday be. So yeah, I mean, I loved that story, and I think it's like a very small moment and a small frame of what like Rocky Horror means to a lot of people.
Yeah, totally. It's nice like when you hear like personal stories like that of like how the film like impacted someone so much, or like the play, I guess, because this story traces back further than we even know, like through all these remakes and stuff like mm-hmm. that, but just the story from whatever its root was.
Yeah. I mean, the play was based on like early sci-fi movies, so it's a movie based on a play that was based on movies.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely goes back in time.
It does.
But it's timeless.
Mm-hmm. Really.
As well.
Yeah. I think this is like a lot of the sort of importance of this. Just it comes from like the community, I think, that's been curated around it. And I think like that community sort of came about just like you look at Rocky Horror and how it portrays like fluid sexuality and queerness, and it's so casual that it's like inviting community to form around it, it feels like. And I know a lot of like the call and response has been likened to the call and response that kind of occurs during like Mass, which I think is part of what makes this film so special. There's so much like intricacy and rituals around it that it's been elevated to the status of something that's like almost holy within the queer community, which I think is something that's really special. And I'm really glad that we've been able to see this film and like the culture around it be preserved and like built on for so long. And like, you know, you've got like, you know, the people who were out at the original screenings of this, like before it was even a thing, like inventing these call and responses. And then even now, like we're still getting new call and responses and like people building on this in such interesting and unique ways. It feels like it's really such a pillar of queer filmmaking that I am like, yeah, I'm just so glad that we have something that can exist and fulfill this space in a way that like the Rocky Horror Picture Show does.
Yeah. And the fact that like the way the community, like the way that the sort of ritual of it exists is so like anti-gatekeeping, in that like mm-hmm. you know, if you go to a Rocky Horror screening for the first time, like they call you like a Rocky Horror virgin, which is like a term of endearment. And at a lot of screenings, they'll draw a little V on your forehead in lipstick. And they'll like, you know, sometimes they'll have you up on stage to do like silly little initiation rituals. And like, it's, you know, really in the spirit of the film, like, you know, embracing people into a community and like inviting people into the fun and the celebration.
Totally. I love what you like had to say about it evolving as well, and like always filling a gap and always inviting no matter what, whether it was like in its flop era, it still wasn't like an exclusive fit thing. And then it reaches this like new generation and a new generation of fans. And each time it's able to like morph to fill a certain place in a community, like, and whatever it means to belong then and there. Like, it's ever changing and it's not like stuck in one place, which I really like. At least for me, like, I haven't been to a live screening. Like, I kind of just know it. I knew of it for this past while up until last night, like just referenced through other films. Like, I had seen it in Fame. Have either of you seen Fame?
A long time ago, but I know, I think Sal Piro, the longtime president of the Rocky Horror Fan Club, has a cameo in Fame.
Yeah, so Sal Piro, himself. He's like the MC of this screening of Rocky Horror, which is like at that main New York like presenting space, I guess. And it's featured in the film, and Fame like becomes pivotal in the showcast like culture. Like, it provides this blueprint of how a showcast, how an opening, a pre-show, how that should happen. Like, Fame was really pivotal to this second generation of like, okay, let's start structuring this. Like, let's see what this could look like once we have like callbacks and stuff like that. But anyway, in that film, it was like pivotal for the one of the characters, Doris. Like, she's kind of the shy, uptight girl. And then she goes to this screening and she's like looking around and she ends up just running on stage like on her own. And it's this like awakening for her of joining community. And again, we see this in Perks of Being a Wallflower, like our shy, like uptight, kind of anxious Charlie. And he eventually like goes right up on stage and it just becomes this like image and pillar of I can belong here and I can like feel like I belong somewhere.
Yeah. And also the fact that Charlie plays Rocky. And I was just saying that, like, when I first saw Rocky Horror Live, Rocky was played by this woman in a gold bikini, which blew my mind. and, like, I think for a lot of shadow casts, like, you know, it doesn't have to mirror this, like, muscular man in the movie. Like, anyone can be Rocky. Like, anyone can be this figure, this icon of sex appeal.
Exactly. Yeah. I
love
that.
Don't
dream it, be it.
I gotta rewatch Fame.
All right, closing thoughts is we gotta rewatch Fame. We've gotta rewatch anything that's inspired by or inspired Rocky Horror, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is the October watch list.
Yeah.
Yes.
Any closing thoughts or should we get right into a couple minutes of Time Warp?
I think we have to get right into a couple minutes of Time Warp.
I think it's like, that time.
Yeah, the original song in which a narrator tells a group of queer people how to do a dance before Hot to Go, there was Time Warp.
Yes. That's so true. I never thought of it like that. All right, well, here's Time Warp.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Just a jump to the left.
And then a step to the right.
With your hands on your hips.
You bring your knees in tight. There is the pelvic thrust. It really does you insane. Let's do the time warp again. Let's do the time warp again.
It's a dream. You can't see me. No, not at all. In another dimension.